The Enterprise's mission to Mudor 5 has been completed. Picard doesn't know the laughing Vulcan and his dog, and the O'Brien's child will be a hell of a gymnast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Serac Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk, and today we're doing a review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 5, Episode 5, entitled Disaster, story by Ron Jarvis and Philip A. Sorza, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, directed by Gabrielle Beaumont. This was October 19th, 1991. Where were you? We have a very special guest here. We are so very lucky. Mr. Dan Curry, a man that needs no introduction. How are you doing today, Dan?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming back to our show. Once again, you always have the best stories and the coolest experiences. And how are you doing today, Serac, by the way?
Doing great. Doing great. Excited to see Dan here. Talk to him about all of his adventures, creating all this stuff.
You were kind of all over the place in this episode, weren't you, Dan? Like you did a little bit of everything.
It was great fun. A couple of the interesting things is we had to build a model turbo lift for some of those shots where you see the kids crawling inside. Mm-hmm. And the turbo lift model was actually quite small. It was maybe 8 or 9 feet long, but only about 8 inches in diameter. And it was built by Brick Price and his company Wonderworks. And there was something funny happened with someone who might be referred to as a stage mother. In second unit, we used to shoot a lot of the technical shots, like blue screen, stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I had the camera up on a platform with a ladder going down, and the kids were climbing it. And we had a blue screen on the floor so that we could composite them into the model turbo lift shaft. And there was a second.
Okay, so first of all, you were the second team director. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did that for many episodes for the shots that took too long, or that were technically difficult, or sometimes that entailed bladed weapons. And like the one I'm talking about, it took a long time to set up a tower to do one shot and have the kids look like they're climbing the ladder.
So are you saying that you had it horizontal instead of vertical?
The ladder was perfectly vertical, and we were shooting straight down with a big blue screen on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And the kids would crawl up. And so there was one boy who I wanted him to just grab the ladder and pull in and not overact. And so during every rehearsal, he was great. But then when we'd roll the camera, he started overacting and doing all this stuff. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. I said, just pull it in. You don't have to do all that stuff. And every time he'd do that. So I got suspicious and I told the cameraman, don't roll when I say action. Let me look at something. So I walked to the back of the platform. I looked underneath, and the kid's mother was standing underneath, miming what she thought he should be doing. And
I had
to explain to her that the set is not a democracy. There's only one director. Just go have another.
I thought you were going to say that you just you didn't say action. You just said, "Oh, we're going to do another rehearsal."
I thought the same thing. Just pretend like we're going to do a rehearsal. But that reminds me of overenthusiastic mothers that think that this is, you know, whatever they think is the best way for their kid to get the most camera time or stand out in some type of way. But that's interesting that you, now was the model built before the shot was filmed or vice versa?
At the same time, because we would put it together in post-production.
Okay. And the interior of the shaft, where the blueprints for that, was that something you had to come up with for this particular episode, or was that already part of like some technical manual or something?
No, the art department gave us blueprints for it. And then it was the shafts were milled out of pieces of aluminum. That way they could do high-tech surfaces, and that way, and we could put some lights on the outside so that it would look like there were windows and different floors and stuff.
Wow. So you weren't just doing visual effects, you were actually directing and and actually coaching actors in some cases as well. That's
Second
pretty
unit directing,
amazing.
that's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that is.
that was the most fun. I probably did hundreds of days of directing second unit.
And when you're doing the second unit directing, are you working alongside the first the director of the episode and coordinating notes and shots?
No, normally what happens is.
Because this was Gabriel Beaumont in this particular episode.
Yeah, and by the way, interesting thing about Gabrielle, her dad was the sword master on The Adventures of Robin Hood with Richard Green that I watched religiously when I was a boy.
Whoa, way back
Oh,
then, huh?
okay.
Not
In the
when you were a boy,
Cretaceous
I mean the
period.
show. You
I
weren't a
was a
boy
boy in
way
the.
back when.
Yeah, right after that we graduated from clay tablets to papyrus.
those were the good old days. So you did not correspond, you were going to say, with the director when.
Generally, it depended on the director. Sometimes, especially with somebody I knew, I would talk to the director, but usually we would have a rough cut of the episode, and the editors would say, oh, we need a close up of fingers pressing this button, or we knew that it was going to be a big stunt, so that it could take 4 or 5 hours to do the one shot. And so they regular directors couldn't afford that time, and they were usually very technical anyway. So I would just go in and direct those. And by looking at the rough cut and talking to the editor, would make sure that what I did would fit in properly with the rest of the show.
So, Dan, one of the things that was most memorable about this episode, because this is one of those really great, iconic, memorable episodes, but there are a bunch of chunks, right? And that's what I love about it, is all the little separate stories. So I never fully remembered one specific grouping if it was part of this episode. And it is the group with Geordie LaForge and Beverly Crusher. It's a very memorable group of scenes, especially the last one. I remember watching that as a kid and being like, wow, that's really cool that Geordie came up with everything. And Beverly was like, they were like such a great team. She says, oh, we'll have this amount of time before we lose consciousness and all that. And then he passes out, but she comes through in the end. And it was just such a fascinating and iconic, set and scene. And there's green flames, there's canisters flying out of there. I know you had to have a part in some of this, right?
Yeah, well, we would we would do some of that stuff in post-production, especially with green flames and things like that.
How'd you make that
And
green flame?
we would shoot different elements, and I think some of the green flame was. I remember I met a guy who had a an industrial laser projection system, who would do it for concerts, and I. Rented his time one day and went in his garage, put a piece of white foam core up on the wall, and used his lasers and would bounce them off melted pieces of plastic, crumpled beer cans, whatever I could, Saran wrap, whatever I could think of, and those things became the tractor beam of the Enterprise,
Wow.
plasma fire, all sorts of stuff. And same thing as tinted liquid nitrogen being blasted was a handy thing. So we used a lot of that stuff. And that day of shooting laser elements, we wound up using many, many takes of that for different text, different effects on the show.
So just to get it from my understanding, so the different elements that you used that you filmed with this reflective surface off of created different visual effects that you were able to use for multiple different things.
Because whatever the laser was hitting, it would diffract it in a unique way. And then I just took an old Mitchell camera and shot on a tripod whatever images were on the wall. And so, and we even used that right up through Star Trek Enterprise.
Wow.
So the green flames were green when you filmed them.
No, we probably, I don't recall exactly how we did that,
Okay,
but we
okay.
probably tinted those in post-production.
Okay.
But
Yeah,
so
I
much.
got a question. Yeah, I had questions about that. I was like, how do you create a plasma fire? Because I've never seen a plasma fire, and I don't know where you get the reference from, but I thought it was well done for my own imagination's
Well,
purposes.
we made it up as we went along. Oh, now that I think about it, there was plasma fire that we saw in the wall, right? In through a
Yes.
hole in the wall. Okay, how
Yes.
we did that is I took a clear baking tray, like a rectangular tray that you would bake a
Cookies.
flat cake in, and put a light underneath it and put warm water in it and put crystals of dry ice in it, and as the dry ice
Oh.
bubbled in the hot water, and we shot it, and then just tinted it green in compositing. So it was basically dry ice interacting with hot water in a glass tray.
Wow. That's brilliant.
Yeah, the magic is amazing. The way it ends up looking at the end is so funny. It's so futuristic, and but yet it's so basic when you break it down, all the elements of it. It's amazing how your mind is able to extract stuff like that out of these household kind of items. And like, where would you get the idea to use this particular guy's laser machine? Like, where did that even come from in your head to say, oh, if I had this industrial laser machine and projected against plastics and beer cans and stuff, like, how would that even start? Like, you
Well,
just meet a guy with a machine?
I met the guy and he was explaining, oh, I have this cool thing that I use for concerts. I didn't really know him. And I said, hey, how about I take a day of your time and shoot some stuff with it? And we'll just, so I just played with the laser for a day and it wound up being a great investment because we used it over different things over and over again. Like when you saw the Borg towing the Enterprise,
Yeah.
the tractor beam, that was one of those elements from that day.
It's like a refracted kind of tractor beam kind of thing where it's, it was like prismatic or something.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. I mean, I guess it's part of your imagination. It's part of co the coincidences of meeting somebody at a certain time in your life when you're in a mental space of creating visual effects to this degree. Do you recall the time period that occurred, that this idea was it early
It would have been
90s?
around 1990-ish.
Yeah. Wow, that's remarkable. I also had were there any visual effects required for the data head, or was that all just smoke and mirrors?
It was that was smoke and mirrors. We just put Brent in the thing and shot it as a lockdown and then replaced his body at the bottom with the clear set. But in that same sequence, Brent Data says, open the doors, and we saw all these barrels fly out. Well, what we did was we made a copy of the floor in miniature and made miniature barrels. And coming from a martial arts background, you learn how to make gravity your friend. And so by setting the floor perfectly vertical, and then the barrels were held in by little pins that were came up through the floor and a green screen at the bottom and shooting straight down, by pulling all the pins out simultaneously, the barrels all fell, but they looked like they were being sucked out through the door of
That's
the
perfect. That
spaceship.
is just brilliant. I love the creativity. That really
And by
works. You
shooting
could
at
totally picture
a
that.
high frame rate, they were slower, so the barrels looked big. And they were made by the late great Greg Jean.
Oh, this guy, we know about him. You know, I want to touch a little
Wow.
bit more on the data stuff too, because I looked very closely. I just assumed that, you get Brent and you put some thing around his neck, but I could not see a line. I could not see where the line was of like where it closed. Where was that line?
We just drew it in a process called rotoscoping. You just trace what you want to, where you want to make a matte line, where you want to separate one part of the image from another.
I
And so
see.
we drew that by hand.
So there wasn't anything practical here at his neck.
There probably was. I forget how we did it, but I'm sure the art department made some little lip for it, but
Yeah, it was
maybe not.
clean. It was clean.
Easy to draw a straight line.
I wanted to ask you about, you said Wonderworks. Is that a modeling company that you worked with
Yeah, they were in
frequently?
Chatsworth. We didn't use them a lot. They were busy doing theme park stuff, but I happen to know a couple of the people that work there, and our usual guys were really busy. So I said, "Hey, do you have time to make this turbo lift for us?" And they did. So that was, and they were happy to work on Star Trek. It was kind
Yeah, who wouldn't be?
of, yeah.
Wonderworks out of Chatsworth. That's cool. Dan, do you have any other memorable episodes in which you were a second unit director? Because I'm kind of fascinated by this. Like you said, you did it tons of times. Were there any that really stood out to you?
One of my most memorable things, and it also showed the quality of Robbie McNeil as a human being. We were doing a scene of the Captain Proton episodes in Star Trek Voyager, where they go back into like Republic serials of the 1930s, and I was able to, from memory, how I remembered Flash Gordon, the ship. That's how I drew the designed the Captain Proton ship. And because my memory was a little faulty, it wasn't a perfect copy, but it was in the right neighborhood. So at any rate, Robbie was supposed to be able to fly like Commando Cody and the Lost Planet Airmen. And they actually somehow found Commando Cody's real outfit with his helmet and his jetpack and his leather jacket. And so Robbie was wearing that, and we had him on a seesaw. And Dick Brownfield, the special effects supervisor, had found these industrial sparklers. So he realized the jetpack was steel and safe. So he put a couple of these sparklers in it. And I asked the special effects department to make a form-fitting fiberglass support so Robbie could lay on it and it would fit his body perfectly. And we just had this big seesaw kind of flying Robbie around, and he's waving his arms around. And luckily, Dick Brownfield had the foresight to put racing drivers' fireproof underwear under Robbie's costume. And so Robbie's flying around, and the sparklers are shooting out all these hot sparks. And I noticed Robbie's butt was on fire. And
Wow.
so, get him down. So we lowered him down, ran in with fire extinguishers, put it out. And to show Robbie's qualities as a man, no fuss, no fuss, no whining, no threats, just, okay, let's get another take.
Wow, what a pro.
Well, yeah. That gives a whole new meaning to liar, liar, pants on
Oh
fire.
boy. Sirach, what would you do if on Deep Space Nine your butt got lit on fire? Would you be like chill about it, or would you not take it
I don't know.
well?
Have you ever had the chili? No, I think that Robbie's a great guy, and he showed his true class when he handled that situation without having a kind of a meltdown. But yeah, thank God he had those fireproof underwears, because if he didn't, then I'm pretty sure he'd have a meltdown.
Yeah, I worked on a movie many years ago where somebody fell onto a road flare, and it did not have such good results. And Lou Gossett wound up having a permanent scar on his neck.
Oh, wow.
Things can happen and go wrong, and that's why you have professionals in there that kind of think of the fail safes for certain things, thank God for that. So that was also a second AD kind of pickup shot for that
Yeah.
particular thing.
Yeah, and like in your show Deep Space Nine, at the end, Captain Sisko is fighting with Gul Dukat, and Gul Dukat has this special book, and he falls into the fire, and you
Yeah.
see them going down, and they
Oh, yeah.
consume fire, and you see the book break in half. Well, how he
Yeah.
did that, I asked Dick Brownfield to make a turntable, and with two rigs, so. Avery and Mark Alamo were standing on it as they were struggling. We turned the camera 90 degrees sideways, so it looked like they were falling away from us in the correct perspective, and just kept spinning them, and then shot separate pieces of fire and enveloped them in fire because they were against green. I could take the mats and condense them and make it look like fire was wrapping around them. And so that
Yeah.
was.
That's
And
incredible. I
frequently
remember
entailed
everybody
a lot
remembers
of
that scene so
cooperation.
well. That's a
Yeah, I remember it
like
as soon as
a
you said. So
powerful moment, yeah.
they were standing on his like a record player.
Yeah, literally a big record player. Yeah.
Wow.
And in that same episode, I had taken a trip to my ancestral homeland in Ireland. And funny story with that. We wanted to go to a place in Southwest Ireland called Bisonhead, which has these famous cliffs. And I didn't realize something like that would close at night. So we got there just as they were closing the gate. And the guy said, "Sorry, we're closed." And so my son, who was about 15 at the time, said, "Too bad, Dad. You could have used some of those photographs on Star Trek."
Oh boy.
And the guard said, "Star Trek, do you know Colomini?" And I said, "Of course I know. I work with him all the time. He's a great guy." And they said, "Well, hang on a minute." And it turned out Colum is a national hero in Ireland. So with that, two more guys showed up and they personally toured us around. And I took a lot of photographs and they became the exterior of the Bajoran fire caves in the end.
Oh, fun.
Wow.
See, you just got to name
Wow.
drop sometimes. Just got to
And
drop column.
yeah.
Yeah.
And then the interior of the fire caves, some of the walls and ceiling are crag caves in Ireland. And on Voyager, we even took advantage of an Iron Age fort I photographed in Ireland. And they wrote a whole episode to take advantage of it, where it was called Blink of an Eye, where Voyager goes to a planet that they run through time much faster than we do. And so I did the same matte painting from the same angle in different time periods to show how they went from the Bronze Age, Stone Age, the Bronze Age, Iron Age, Middle Ages, Industrial Era, and present day. And so your travel photographs can become part of your work. A glacier I was on in Canada became the Andorran ice planet.
That was beautiful, that the Andorian ice planet. I remember that. Beautiful. Hey, we're almost out of time here, Dan Curry,
Amazing. I'm sorry, yeah.
before we move on though, I want to point something out too. Some great stuff. The Enar was the ice stuff. Check this out. Everybody at home, you can get Star Trek: The Artistry of Dan Curry hardcover. It is a big, beautiful book. It is giant. It has so much great art. I mean, look just the cover. Look at the
Yeah.
Klingon. Look at the Klingon ribs, their skeletal system. I mean, just the cover itself is gorgeous. It's got so much of Dan Curry's art and special effects and conceptual designs, and it's basically what you
Beautiful.
got right now was one page. And there's plenty others in that book. So you could get that at Amazon.com or anywhere you get your books. It's called The Artistry of Dan Curry. You should definitely check that out. I have one and I love it. I sleep with it every night. It's my
Oh,
bedtime story. No, but it's amazing.
well,
Mr.
thank
Dan
you.
Curry,
It's
thank
just
you
been
so
published in
much.
German, by the way.
Really? Sirach,
Yeah.
you're all set.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. What I really wanted to do is trace the evolution of visual effects technology and honor the army of talented, dedicated people that
all work together to make the effects happen.
Yes,
Yeah,
absolutely.
you're always quick to highlight that it's a team effort. That's something that you're very consistent with, and it's also something that shows your humility as a superstar VFX guy. And that's what it takes. It takes that level of humility to make it as long and as successful as you have, because people want to work with you based on your talent, ability, and humility. So, Dan, it's a pleasure every time we see you. You
Thank you.
always enlighten us with stories. Your creativity and imagination will forever live on and is part of the legacy of Star Trek. Thank you.
Well, thank you guys.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, stick around. You just heard a lot about Dan Curry. It's all true. He's freaking amazing. Check him out. Check out his book. We'll be right back, everybody. We're going to cover this episode a lot more on the seventh rule.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: Startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the seventh rule with Serac Lofton.
Hello.
Here are those trivioids of the week that you've been waiting so patiently for. The Enterprise's mission to Mudor 5 has been completed. The O'Brien's child will be a hell of a gymnast. Geordi tries to sing the modern Major General song. The Enterprise is hit by a quantum filament. An energy conduit ruptured and ignited the polyduranide inside the bulkhead. The quantum filament caused a polarity shift. Captain Picard has a broken ankle. Picard doesn't know the Laughing Vulcan and His Dog song. Apparently there aren't many qualifications to being a first officer. All right. So, Sirok, let's let the truth be known. What did you really think of this episode?
I tell you what, I wasn't so keen on it in the beginning. Right away from the beginning, I thought, oh, Crusher trying to get LaForge to sing, what's really going on? I like the slice of life stuff, but this particular slice wasn't something that was that appealing, right? So I'm like, okay, Crusher's trying to get LaForge to sing. All right. And it's funny because when he first was like, no, I don't want to, I thought this was another relationship LaForge issue, more like, girl troubles. But it wasn't. It was the singing thing. So then I was like, all right. And then it goes, then it cuts to the kids. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. It's gonna be Picard and
Picard and
kids.
kids. Oh boy, here it
Yeah.
comes.
I was like, here it comes. His kryptonite, right? It's like, and I'm like, I thought they got rid of Wesley so they don't have to deal with this subject anymore. That's what I'm thinking, right? So I'm like, here they are bringing the kid stuff back, and not even like high level older kids, right? That would be like maybe like the top level kids in their class in
Yeah,
high school
it's
or
not
going
even
to
like three
college.
Wesley Crushers. It's three
Right.
toddlers.
three kids at elementary school, right?
Captain
And
Radish.
he had the funniest line when he said that about the radish. He's like, I planted a some, I got some special dirt. I planted some radishes and some special dirt, and they came up all weird. And like, all right, this is not high level thinking going on right here. This is, I can turn my Star Trek brain off for a second because these kids are going to be just regular kids, right? And the funny thing is, the first kid was like, can we see the battle bridge and torpedo bay? I was like, bro, right? Those kids want right into the action, right? They want to see They want to see the weapons system.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. He's like, no, but we will see some hydroponics. And the kid's
Yeah.
like, maybe when I'm a teenager, I'd be interested in that, but not right now.
Not right now. So yeah, that was my initial thinking. Then it got better. And what made it better is the usage of these miniature groups of people in their own, basically their own storyline or their own plot. And it was, the grouped off, sectioned off. I thought it was a great idea, for example, to have the ship doors not opening and everybody trapped in their particular space so that they had to figure out a problem in their own location and figure out how to problem solve individually while also coming up with collective solutions, right? So that was what was interesting to me about this episode for me. When it got to the point where everybody was locked into their particular end of the storyline after the anomaly happened, then it started getting good because then I'm like, okay, cool. Now I get to see Geordi and Crusher try to problem solve in this kind of moment, right? And now I get to see Riker and Data, their own experience. I wasn't thrilled about Worf being in charge of sick people. Like I can only imagine you're like your leg is broken. You're like, oh my God. And Worf's
It's
like
like, I will place your leg. It will be a sharp pain.
yeah.
Prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Snap.
It's like, yeah.
You bore that
So
well.
yeah, so either way, and that's when it got interesting for me. The each of them caught in their individual storyline. And then also I thought this was finally a good opportunity for Troy because I'd like
Totally.
to see her in that space where she felt a little anxiety and nervousness about the responsibility of leadership. But I also feel like, again, I'm just going to throw out her abilities as a empath because right now, I don't know when she can use it and when she can't use it. It's like you can't tell there's life on the other side. Like you can't tell that Riker is alive on the other side of the ship.
Yeah, but then when Riker's like light years
On
away
a
on another
planet.
planet,
Yeah.
she's like, oh, I sense he's taking a shower
Yeah.
right now. Oh, he's thinking of me. Oh, like,
Yeah. So I don't, I'm going to just throw it out. I don't know what her powers are. I don't even
yeah,
know.
her powers are the speed of plot, too. That's for
It's
sure.
the speed of the plot. And so I'm just going to go ahead and stop expecting her to know certain things. Like, I just couldn't expect how she wouldn't be able to, be able to psychically reach out to these different people just to do check in on if they're even alive or not.
Yeah, they really
But,
just never seem to know what to do with Troy because
yeah.
her role seemed to be so clearly, excuse me, so clearly defined from the very first episode.
Yeah.
But then it didn't really work too well. Like they didn't use it much. Then her powers were kind of undefined. Then we had Guinan come in who's like, she's the listener. So she's kind of halfway the counselor, which shaves off certainly a lot of scenes that Troy would have then had. So now she has an even smaller sliver of a role. So they need to figure out a way to fill out her role more than just literally the psychiatrist that, that half the people don't go to. Half the people go to the bartender because they like her better. And so now she's a psychiatrist that only half the people go to. So I thought this was good because it gives her
Yeah.
a little bit more Starfleet. A little bit more like, hey, she was shown, she's like, I'm not familiar with this. I'm not familiar with that. But hopefully, this puts her more into a trajectory of being more of an officer. And then she can have a little bit bigger of a role.
Yeah, and that's another thing I had a slight problem with. I don't want to nitpick on her because, I thought her performance was great when it comes to feeling the weight and the burden of the responsibility of having to make decisions. I thought she played that very well as an actor. One of the things I had issue with was how does she not know that she's the highest ranking person in the room?
Seriously.
like you know what I mean? Like that should that would be to me something like Starfleet 101, chain of command. This is rank. This is how it
It's
goes.
her and two recurring characters, you know?
Well, Ensign Ro is an ensign, so we
Yeah.
know you don't get any look, right? Where you,
Yeah.
there's it's
And
you and there's Chief O'Brien. So
the transporter
there's
chief, who does a
the
little bit of
transport.
security too, as you saw, he was security
But
officer on the
there's three of
bridge.
you.
Yeah.
One of you's an ensign who just got there yesterday. So it should be obvious to you that you're in charge, or you know what I mean? Because you're on the bridge all the time, sitting exactly on the captain's side. So how would you not know that you're the ranking officer in that situation? I can understand if it was like a confusion there because there's maybe several lieutenant off, you know, commanders there or something to that effect. But even in that situation, I think it's a known fact who is ranking, who ranks. I think that's how the military usually works. Who ranks, you know, the ranks are pretty obvious.
Right. There's a chain of command that's pretty clear and obvious at all times.
So when O'Brien had to explain that to her, and she's like, oh, like, oh wow, yes, yeah, it is like I'm in
Maybe she was
charge.
just hoping he would take over, maybe, you know, but then she ends up having that growth
Which I
and
liked,
kind of
which I liked.
standing up to Ro. And we got to see Ro for a second time. So we know now that she's back, at least for that one episode. Got to see some O'Brien. I mean, this episode did what I love, which is pairing people off, right? I think there
Yeah.
were, what, like five groups? There was Geordi and Crusher. There was Troy and Chief O'Brien and Ro. There was Picard and the kids. There was Riker and Data, Worf and Keiko, right? So we used a lot of recurring characters to really fill it out. So what is that, like 11 characters in total, something like that? Or 10, just Picard and then a bunch of kids. Anyway, that's what I loved about it. And that's what I remembered about this episode. Obviously, the most monumental part of this episode is Molly O'Brien is born. So this is the moment where Molly O'Brien is born. So that's also very cool and exciting. And I think it's cool that Molly and Keiko and Worf and O'Brien all go together into Deep Space Nine because they're kind of like a little family there.
Yeah, I liked when Keiko, she looked at a Worf and she's like, I am pushing, and the face she gave was like that's the
Excellent.
face.
Yeah.
It was the that's the official face. It she locked in on the you're pissing me off by asking me dumbass questions face.
There's a lot of comedy in that scene, yeah.
So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, that's when it started to pick up for me in the enjoyment. So I didn't start off like, oh God, I can't wait to see what this is going to be. Of course, the anomaly itself, I don't know. Again, I had to suspend my belief system on whatever that is. Okay, adios.
Sorry, it's just a fill in the blank anomaly. They're just like, don't, that's not important to the episode. It's just a thing.
Yeah, don't
But
ask questions. Yeah.
also thought it was funny when Riker was like, "You want me to take off your head?" And he's like, "Yes, sir." And he
Yeah.
like laughs. I mean, there was so many good comedic moments where they're giggling, you know, when Picard calls him, "You're the executive officer in charge of radishes." There are a lot. Oh.
Yeah.
And Picard was cute when he says, when they're like, "Nope, we all go together or we all stay together." He says, "All right, but I want you to know this is mutiny." And
Yeah,
that's cute. Good job, Picard.
that was great. And Picard showed very there was a soft side of him shown in this episode that I enjoyed as well. When he started to hand out the pips and assign leadership and say you're going to be my number one and you're the you know science officer, I thought, oh, smart. That was very good, Picard. Now you've got their attention. You can follow. They'll follow orders, and you
Kind
have
of.
engaged. Well, kind of.
Yeah,
And you'll have at least you'll have some rapport built with these kids as opposed to just being, you know, grumpy about it. So I thought that was really good. But then I also thought that he didn't acknowledge the fact that they pretty much saved his life.
totally.
Right? Because he didn't like that elevator ended up crashing afterwards. And if he had stayed behind, you know, that's the end of Picard. So he didn't even acknowledge that and say, well, thanks a lot for convincing me to leave, young fellas.
Yeah, I guess I won't court-martial you for the mutiny.
Yeah. Yes, yes. That would have been nice.
Yeah, there are a couple other good moments, too. Like, where was it? Oh, when Riker, sorry, when Riker hits the wrong cord in Data's head and Data makes a face, he's like, that is the wrong, not the correct port, sir. That was excellent. Also, a sad moment was when Troy says to Chief O'Brien, she's like, oh, that's just like a whatever it was. He's like, no, that's a completely different phenomenon. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
But they're doing that just to show the growth, I guess, or maybe to teach her that maybe she wants to learn more about this stuff.
Yeah, but see, then there it is again. Like, so then if yeah, because people's lives are in the balance, then you have to be to some degree prepared for that kind of circumstance. You know, she looked really like, I don't know what the hell's going on here anymore. It's, yeah. And it's like, you've been in the meetings, you've been in the briefings, you've been in the, you know, every time that they have discussions about what do we need to do, course of action, and everybody's sitting there. You've been at those things now for 5 seasons, which is over 100 times we've seen you
yeah.
do it. So we expect that you would have, even through osmosis, some level of competency. And I felt like we got some story growth there, because I did like when she finally came to the conclusion that she was going to, you know, power the systems and the engineering so that they could get, you know, basically she took a gamble that somebody else was alive. And I thought that was the right decision to make. But again, you know, there's some issues with how unprepared she was for that and how she didn't even realize she was at that thing.
Yeah.
You know, in command. But the whole Data using his head thing, that you mentioned that a little bit a second ago, but Riker's uncomfortability with that, he was trying to tell Data, like, it's weird to just walk around with somebody's head. You know, like that was making him feel some type of way. But Riker was also deliberating, like, this guy is a robot, like an android, so it doesn't, me telling him that won't exactly make a difference either. So
I wonder if Jonathan Frakes was making a lot of jokes about that on set. I'm not going to get into what kind of jokes, but I feel like there was some kind of jokes about Data on set with his head and stuff, but I don't know.
I mean, there's a limitless amount of jokes. He said his, you know, good thing he doesn't have his CPU in his balls, for example, because that would be weird.
He'd be like, yes, sir. You must carry them. I can detach them for you.
Yes.
Like, do you have a bag or something? No, you will need to tinker with them. You need to cup them.
What are
just,
you doing,
just give
Riker?
Me your head instead.
Trust me, I'll explain later.
Chief O'Brien's like, wow, that is the most perfect balls I've ever seen. Well, they're an androids, okay? Can't rely. Of course they're perfect. Anyway, did somebody say gamble a couple minutes ago? I think Sorok did. And that reminds me of,
yeah,
shout out to Pete Rose.
Okay.
He's a baseball player, or
yeah,
was. And so that reminds us it's time for the home run of the episode. That was quite a stretch, but I did it.
Oh, yeah, there it is. The home run of the episode.
Who gets that today?
Let's see. You know, because this episode was so spread out, there wasn't one person who stood out the most, in my opinion. Yeah, ironically, I'm going to give it to the, I tell you what, I'm going to give it to, and I don't get a chance to say this often, but to Marina Sirtis, to Deanna Troi. There were very good moments that she hit there, even though it's not, I don't necessarily agree with those moments per se, as far as, you know, the way it's written, but the way it was written, she hit it out of the park. I did feel the weight and the burden kind of lay on her. I felt like she was indecisive. She was also really good at deferring in those moments and kind of admitting that she didn't know much in a way of communicating. It's hard for me to really see anybody who stood out in other ways. But yeah, I would say that Marina Sirtis gets the home run this time.
Interesting. I'm going to go with two. One is Gates McFadden, because I just really liked the moments that she had. They were very memorable, especially when, poor Jordy passes out. And as a viewer, you think, uh-oh, are we in trouble? But oh, we forgot there's two of them. She can do it too. She was just, they both did the run. He went first. It was just a nice little twist that I liked, and she was good there. And also Rosalind Chao, because she had some very funny moments. And she keeps showing, I think, the writers that she can do the work so they can keep using her. And Chief O'Brien, Colomini, he can do the work so they can keep using him. And as we know, it worked because of the things that they did in episodes like this. All right. Here are other people that do the work. And by the work, I mean, I don't know. They're cool. We like them. Their names are Dr. Anne-Marie Segal, Eve England out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Tom, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Titus Moeller, Dr. Muhammad Nora, Anil O, Palat, Joe Bao, Sarati, Mike Gu, Dr. Stephanie Baker, Carrie Schwent, Faith Howell, Edward Foltz, aka Crewman Guy, the Matt Boardman, Chris McGee, Justin Weir, Jake Barrett, Henry Unger, Allison Leach Hyde, Julie Manasvi, Jed Thompson, Dr. Susan V. Gruner, Glenn Iverson, Dave Gregory, Chris Sternett, Greg K. Wickstrom, Cassandra Girard, Chuck A., and of course, Jason M. Oaken and Chris Garris. Thanks very much, everybody. Stick around. We've got the free for all up next. You're going to love it. We'll be right back on The Seventh Rule.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Well, hi there, everybody. We're just singing a little Sheryl Crow like one does. We're back on The Seventh Rule with Ciroc Lofton.
Hello.
It's the free-for-all time with Melissa Longo, of course.
Hi.
Jason M. Oaken has pretty much all of Data's body that stayed. Chris Garris is on the bridge hanging out with some kids
Hello.
on the bridge. Faith Howell is also on the bridge of the Enterprise D, lower deck style. Eve England is judging us and Picard. Chuck A looks like he's got a Picard shirt on. Is that right?
Cisco.
Oh, Sisko, there he is. Very nice. Walking art made by Melissa. Carrie Schwent has her cool Ferengi eyes shirt. There she is, Crafty Bear.
She's matching Eve.
Yeah, I can't see mine.
Beautiful.
Oh, there it is.
Two of them. Excellent. TJ Jackson Bay is at the helm. Practically of the Enterprise D, and Chris McGee is property of Starfleet, of course. Everybody knows. All right. Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
I'm gonna say this might be like a 7.0.
Oh. It's like that, is it? Does
Oh,
anybody else
wow.
have any guesses that doesn't already know?
I think it's probably ranked higher. Not a personal opinion, it's probably ranked higher. High sevens, maybe 7.9.
I was going to say 8.3.
Yeah, 8.2, I was thinking.
It's a 10.
Whoa.
It's good.
Whoa.
Good
There's no
guess.
tens. There's no
However,
tens.
there are always
the
10.
actual retail price is
everybody's favorite Borg, 7.9.
7 of 9.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a good one.
Good one, Jason.
Good guesses, guys. All right. I didn't hear any non-appearance mentions. Did you guys? I mean, unless we met O'Brien's parents or Keiko's parents, which I don't think we ever do. Mm-mm. What about some kind of or some sort of? Was there something in there when they were describing that ribbon or whatever they ran into?
I have a feeling maybe the writers were trying to avoid using that phrase now. So, no.
Some kind of filament. All right, let's get this thing started off on the right track. Melissa Longo, please. What do you think of this episode? Cool Picard shirt.
Some kind of potato chip. I thought this episode was hilarious. And dude, Worf. Some of the best lines ever. You may now give birth. I will never, ever not crack up at that line because of his delivery. It was great. I like that there was comedy throughout the whole episode. Riker had some funny lines. Of course, Picard had some funny lines. And it was just, yeah. And I liked seeing the pairing in this episode because it was unusual pairing. We don't see these, you know, groups of people together very often, which I really enjoyed. I enjoyed Frère Jacques, dormez-vous? Because I learned that in school, except for I learned it ding, dang, dong instead of ding, ding, dong.
Me too.
So, I do have something that made me pretty miffed in this episode. It kept making my ruffles ridge, because yes, but you'll have to watch Things Left Unsaid to find out what that is. So if you're not a patron, please become a patron to find out what cheesed me off. So yeah.
I want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you're thinking.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you want to know what ruffled Melissa's ridge, stick around for Things Left Unsaid. Great stuff. Thank you very much. But she said it, Chris.
I did.
True. Thank you very much, Melissa Longo. Jason M. Oaken, what ruffles your ridge?
A lot of things ruffle my, you know, ridges. They haven't been smoothed out yet. It'll take a disaster for that to happen.
Speaking of which, what did you think of this episode? Nice.
You know, I've always found it entertaining. Now, it's certainly not a, you know, high concept science fiction episode. And I think for the series like Next Gen, it had to be earned, meaning this would probably not look good if it was done at the beginning of the first season or even the second season. It's about the characters. I mean, you can look at it as, you know, a bunch of B plots sort of strung together. Or you can look at it as sort of character exploration, because you do have everybody doing it. You have everybody doing something. I mean, at some level, I think Star Trek became enamored with this so much that they've done it on Deep Space twice. They've done this with Civil Defense, and they've done this with Starship Down. Very kind of similar plots of distress and different groups of people in different places trying to solve little puzzles like this. So so I guess it's stuck. It was nice to see Marina get something more to do in the character of Troy getting something, even though, frankly, they did use her character for exposition because she didn't know anything. So they were telling her and they were telling the audience what was going on. So take it as you will. I think, you know, if you look at the way the script is structured, the way this goes act to act to act, and this is kind of to some degree unusual for Next Gen, and it was more common earlier on, is you have sort of this ramped up Jeopardy and you have these sort of cliffhangers right before each act out, which is a little bit different for the, you know, for the tease of the first, second, and the third act. There's something happening toward the end of it that sort of ratchets up sort of the pressure. Whether you believe it or not is a different thing, but at least it's done as a real act out, as opposed to just, you know, fading to black and going to commercial. So I think it's interesting. It's exciting. Again, it's not a high concept science fiction episode, but I think it certainly is entertaining, and it's well performed. I think everybody's having fun here, as Melissa said. There's a lot of humor interspersed here, and yeah, and you know, the cast certainly has the chops to pull it off. I think you have to have the right comedic timing, otherwise it just comes off cheesy. So it looked good. I mean, it was lighthearted and exciting. So if, yeah, if you don't expect too much of it, you can certainly entertain yourself for 42 minutes.
Yep. Thank you very much, Jason M. Oaken. Great stuff as always. All right, everybody, it's time to venture out to Texas. Chris Garris is here. What do you think of this one?
I think it's a good episode as well. I mean, I think it's really one of the best, in a way, one of the better Troy episodes, because she's thrust into command. And of course, at first, you know, she acts like she really looks like she could fumble the ball big time, but she actually proves that she can do it, especially when she's taking the advice from Roe and O'Brien. And then what I really liked was when Roe tries to force her to separate the saucer section, and she stands up to her and says, "No, we're going to wait." But I also think this is one of Picard's better standout moments, because as we all know, he can't stand kids. Well, he's not a big kid fan, but he really proves that I really feel like his leadership was good. Because he gives them all duties and turning them into his little crew, and, you know, to show them, you know, and that shows his true leadership by overcoming his uneasiness with the kids. You know, granted, he has this one moment where he tells them, "Don't cry." Yeah, I don't think that ever works. I mean, I don't have kids, but I don't think that works.
usually does the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. But and then, you know, I'm sorry, you just Worf and Keiko, just I can't say anything else, because it's just so funny. I mean, he's like, "This is not a good time to have a baby." I don't think it really works that way, Worf. You know, when he's like, push, "I am pushing," you know. It's just so funny. And then right there at the end, Troy gives that little dig to Commander Riker when she tells him, "I hear there are not a lot of qualifications to be a first officer," because and he's like, "You like the big chair." So anyway, but yeah, I think it was good. And I do have some stuff, a couple of things, for things left unsaid, which is probably going to kind of stir up some stuff, but so become a Patreon member so you can hear how many people I piss off.
Get your ridges ready, everybody. All right, thanks very much, Chris Garris, for those goodies. Faith Howell, what's up with you? How have you been, and what do you think of this episode? Do you love it?
This is my number one favorite episode of Next Gen.
Nice.
And I have not seen it in quite a number of years. It definitely was a different experience watching as an adult, because as a kid watching, you know, I'm with Picard and the kids, right? That's my place in the story. But as an adult, you know, there's so much more to take in for this episode. I really appreciated how we did get something from all of the main cast, and they had a real part. Like, every one of the characters saved the ship today. So I really, that was fun. I always remembered the green fire scenes when I was little. Was really impressive, and how they work together to, you know, take deep breaths and get ready for the fire to blow out the airlock. As an adult, I kind of wonder if that actually would even be possible, but I won't poke too many holes in that end of it. I also really, as we've said already, love that we get to see some true growth in Picard in this episode, because we do know that he hates children, and we see him try what he normally would try and kind of calm himself down and regulate and figure out, okay, well, what are we going to do here? Because just sitting here is not an option. I've got to save my crew, and definitely not going to be the captain that died with three little kids on his hands. Right. So, you know, it was fun to get to see him work through that. And his confidence at the end with them was completely different demeanor. And then, of course, I love that we get callbacks to this episode in a number of other places. In first of all, in DS9, when the O'Briens get pregnant with Kiryoshi and Worf is like, peace out. I will not be here. Thank you, sir. And also, I think Ro in Picard. And of course, there are some nods to this later with Troy in different places. I won't go too much into that, but I really, really still love this episode.
No, I had a feeling you loved this episode, Faith. I was waiting for it. For some reason, it feels like a Faith episode. It's a Ryan episode too, I'll have you know. Eve England out in Wales, however. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is really fun. I really did enjoy watching this. And I mean, I had no idea what, you know, what was actually happening, but it just didn't matter and I didn't really care. As Lisa said, it is just about the relationships, and it's just the unexpected and weird pairings of people that you just don't normally get. So I thought that was just fantastic that it was all about relationships, and how then the disaster movie concept just kind of made sense for the storytelling. But, you know, again, you didn't have to ask any questions of it or analyze it too in depth, and it just kind of works. I mean, everyone's already said, but you know, all the interactions, I just loved all of them. There were none of them that I was thinking, oh no, we've gone back to these guys, it's gonna be a bit dull, which sometimes you have sort of beat shots. Obviously the Keiko and Worf bits were just so funny, and it's so good to finally see why Worf actually gets super nervous about their second baby in Deep Space Nine, because I didn't obviously really get that before. I just thought he was just being a bit weird. So, and as Chris and Faith mentioned, Picard has come full circle. And I thought that was, I think they did that really well. And as they said, I think, you know, it was quite impressive how he went from how awkward he was right at the start to actually, you know, treating them, you know, almost like, you know, colleagues on his ship. I thought that was really cool and quite cute. I mean, I was going to sort of, I've seen this since Rose started, but I really do like the conflict that she brings and the tensions, because we don't normally have the sort of a crew member being sort of that aggressive to other crew members in terms of decision-making, et cetera. And I did think that the way that they used Troy assuming command in that sort of unexpected way was kind of a really interesting way of showing actually how difficult it must be for Picard and the captains that we see on all of the shows, because they just make it look so effortless in terms of making these life or death situations and decisions all of the time. And I just like, I think what I found interesting is the fact that she, I think obviously she made the right decision by not splitting the ship and, you know, leaving the crew, that just assuming that they're dead. I just felt that it was quite interesting that she did take a more passive decision there. And I'm not sure she would have found it much more comfortable to actually take that more active decision to actually abandon them, which Ro would have done. So I thought that, and maybe some of the other captains might have done. So I think it was quite an interesting way of just emphasizing how good Picard and the other captains were, while showing obviously, you know, how she actually did stand up and do a really good job. But it was interesting how the counselor kind of approach to leadership just was quite different to what we'd see from a captain. So yeah, just generally just thought it was really good fun, really well done. And the script and the dialogue was just top notch. Yeah, brilliant.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Eve England out in Wales. Great stuff there. Chuck, hey, you're a TNG fanatic, which means you love every episode probably. What'd you think of this one?
Well, it's always one of my favorite episodes, especially coming up after the Silicon Avatar, which, you know, it was a decent episode, but this was far superior with all the comedy and the pairing of the characters. I liked how Data was definitely ahead of the game in the episode. I love Riker's line when Data tells him to connect the new connection. He says, "Need a bigger head." It was really, really funny. Of course, the Worf and Keiko was fantastic. Rosalind Chow acted so well in that scene, showing, you know, her, what's the word I want to use with Worf, that she loved Worf for taking her through that whole ordeal. That was really good. And I love Worf's smile, a little smirk, when he said it looks like Chief O'Brien. It was really, Worf doesn't, you know, do too many smiles and laughs. the scene with Picard and the kids was really good. And I love when they were with the Frere Jacques that Melissa mentioned. And I don't know if anybody noticed, probably you did, that when they brought the commemorative plaque out at the end, it had the all the kids' actors' actual last names. So it was their character's first name and the actor's last name. So it was on the plaque. And if you look at the opening credits, it has the, it gives that same name. Really a terrific episode. Anytime I see it, I continually smile and laugh. And a really well done episode.
Yes, sir. Great stuff. Thank you so much, Chuck A, a.k.a. TNG fanatic. Carrie Schwent, a.k.a. Crafty Bear. She's also a TNG fanatic, I bet you. What'd you think of this one, though?
Yeah, this one is definitely in the tops for me. It's fantastic. I love a good disaster movie. I threw Poseidon Adventure poster behind me when I read that Ron Moore kind of likened the episode to the Poseidon Adventure. The original I've actually never seen, but I saw the 2006 remake, which was very good. And I think it might have been interesting if they had ended up upside down. Probably would have been, it would have been a lot easier for Picard to get out of the turbo lift if it had been upside down with his broken ankle. But yeah, echoing so many of the things everybody's already said. I do love the Picard, especially Picard and the kids. Season one Picard would not have done as well. And even season five Picard struggles a little bit until he starts talking to them like equals. And then that, I think that helped them calm down as well. And of course, I wouldn't be me if I didn't highlight the guest stars. And of course, we have more Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman cast members on here. Number one being Erica Flores, who was one of the main cast member, one of the children that Dr. Mike adopts. Plays Colleen as a series regular for the first half of the series before she left, and they brought somebody else in. Jay Gordon, the blonde boy, he was also on Dr. Quinn, but only for like two episodes. And as soon as I saw him, I remembered exactly one of the episodes that he's in of Dr. Quinn. The little kid, the youngest one, he is just so stinking adorable. But on IMDb, he only has three acting credits, and then he didn't act anymore. But I thought he did great, and honestly, I kind of want to see what the radishes look like from his experiment if they came out totally. Weird.
They were. Totally they looked see weird. What
the radishes look like. Yeah, he was mm-hmm. just absolute cutie pie. But yeah, like everybody else, I love Worf and Keiko. Every line Worf says is just hysterical. Like, you know, the whole I took a class on this and it went just fine. It was nice and orderly. Yeah, I can understand why he went in Deep Space Nine. He's like, nope, bye. Bye-bye. But yeah, and the baby at the end, so cute. And you can always tell when they're distracted by the lights and that behind the camera, because you can watch where like their eye line is. And that baby was clearly watching stuff behind the camera, and it was almost making them smile. And of course, there's nothing better than the baby smiles. And before I get to the limerick, which is of course going to be from Worf, comparing reality to simulation, something that Riker and Data both did that everyone needs to make sure that they do. Always ask permission before you touch a baby belly. Don't just assume. You ask permission first, and then once you have that permission, then you're allowed to do it. Because unfortunately, there's far too many that feel like, oh, look, I want to touch it. Yeah, always get permission first. Get that out of the way. And I do have something about Roe that I wanted to mention briefly, since I wasn't here for the Ensign Roe episode, but I will save that for things left unsaid. And I will finish off with my Worf-centric limerick. I thought the class prepared me for this. That mother was easier to assist. Keiko's baby is coming. Her fortitude is stunning. This new little one is now in our midst.
That little one is Molly. Great stuff, Carrie.
God, we miss Molly.
Also a good rule to follow. Not all cats like their belly rubbed either. They love it for a few seconds and then they hate it. It's kind of weird. Thank you very much, Carrie Schwent, a.k.a. Crafty Bear. Right? They're like, oh, love, love, love. Fuck you.
This is true.
TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri is hanging out with us, and we're so glad that he is. What'd you think of this one, sir?
Well, what did I think of it? I really enjoyed this episode always. As it was one of my favorites as a kid. You can hear me this time, right? Okay, awesome. Yay. There were some TOS callbacks for me in this episode. A couple that stand out is the mention, Dr. Crusher mentioned taking Hyronolin to counteract the radiation, and that was also Dr. McCoy's drug of choice when radiation was involved. And there is an episode in TOS where somebody takes command of the bridge that doesn't really have that kind of experience and ends up steering the ship into a troublesome situation. So
Commodore Stocker.
Yes, that's it. And so, you know, I thought, you know, portraying this, you know, kind of thing with Counselor Troy, although she didn't steer the ship into a troublesome situation, but, you know, this kind of I know that I don't really know what to do, but I've got to kind of step up to, you know, to the plate here and make the best decisions that I can. And I think she handled that role, you know, quite well. And I think Marina handled that well also. But also, you know, a couple of quips that I have on that will be in Things Left Unsaid. Moving on to the next thing, the Worf and Ten Forward, I thought was amazing. I know a lot of people focus on, you know, his interactions with Keiko, but I listened to a lot of, this time around, a lot of his interactions with the other people that he was helping, and he was very compassionate. And I think that, you know, the medical training and bedside manner, you know, that he got from that was very well applied in that situation. And I remember reading in a novel many years back, you know, there was another situation that happened, you know, in the novel, and Riker was wondering, when did Worf become so compassionate? But he demonstrates it in this episode. And so I thought that was quite nice. And so since Carrie was talking about Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, I think I would watch a series of Dr. Worf, Medicine Klingon. And the last thing I have for this segment is Patterson and the kids. You know, I thought it was funny, you know, as they were mutinying. Is that a word you can say? Mutinying. Yep. Is there a present tense? While they were in the act of being mutineers, before everybody else jumped on board, his line is one that I appreciated, you know, the most, when Picard says, "Hey, you're an officer. You gotta follow the order. You gotta get out of here because I said so." And Patterson just said, "Well, I don't want to be an officer anymore. I'm done playing this game." And I thought that was, you know, quite neat. And someone else made a point or alluded to a point that really stood out to me. This is really how a choice that I've made and how I interact with kids, no matter who they are, is to treat them as equals, because they are like a whole person. Yes, they're learning how to interact, you know, with the world that we live in, but they're a whole intelligent, sentient person. And so it's my personal choice in life to treat them that way always. And that's something I just thought I would share. My last point is at the very end of the episode when the kids were on the bridge again, and, you know, Picard, you know, says you have the bridge number one. I think she should have went and sat in the chair. They should have let her do that.
Yeah.
I thought that would have been appropriate.
Aww.
Riker should have just been like, come on, come on. You know, it's yours. You're number one.
Well, that's great stuff. Thanks very much, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri. I did love it when he said number one. They both said, yes, sir. That was cute. All right. Chris McGee is here. He says he's the XO in charge of potato chips. What do you got for us on regarding this episode?
Oh, well, not only is this a great, well-written episode, but it marks an important milestone in the series. As Eve had mentioned, you know, Picard's patience with children is put to its ultimate test, and I think he eventually succeeds and has become a better person because of it. This is probably the last time he's awkward with children. The arrival of Molly, a new character that we see later in this series, and of course, many more times in DS9. And we discover Troy's Starfleet rank in this episode, and her experience here will give her much to think about for a future episode. As we have discussed several times before, and like many of you, I love seeing these little slice of life moments in those scenes at the beginning of this episode are great for establishing the several set pieces that we visit throughout this bottle episode. Despite her adversarial behavior, I appreciate Ro in this episode being the voice of reason and practicality, which is consistent with her established character traits. I love how Riker, kind of on a light, more lighthearted note, I love how Riker wasn't willing to risk Data's safety with that electrical current until Data suggested removing his head. I guess Riker was just too curious to pass up that opportunity. And like most people have already said, as always, Worf's deadpan delivery of his lines makes him the comic relief of the episode, especially when he says, you know, I will smack the child to induce breathing. How many of us thought for just a split second that he would seriously hurt the baby, knowing that Klingons never do anything small? And there is one thing that frosts my nuggets, but I'll save it for things left unsaid, like most other people. Go to my memorable quote. There's so many lines I remember over the years, but no single one really stands out from the rest. So I'll just go with this one from Miles. I'm not sure who to feel sorry for, the captain or the kids.
Good line. Good line. Our nuggets have frosted tips. Thank you very much, Chris McGee, the Dark Lord. All right, the Matt Boardman, please don't comment on that. But what did you think of this episode? Did you love it?
I do. I'm just wondering, do you find that somewhere in the cereal aisle? Is that next to the frosted plates? Nuggets. That is all I have to say about that. Sorry, I was a little late to this. I was busy planting some radishes in some weird dirt, and they were coming up all weird. So, I totally did not pay attention. So, what a cool episode! I love bottle episodes. You know, I think people sometimes they get panned a little bit, but what an opportunity that they had here to tell some really cool stories and to get everybody involved in one way or another, and not just involved, but like play to people's strengths, right? And put people in positions that, like, for example, Worf delivering a baby, who would have thought that? Which, if you were, you guys probably already talked about this, but when later on in Deep Space Nine, when Molly, or not Molly, but Keiko's pregnant again, and Worf hears it, he's like, Keiko's pregnant? And he talks, you know, and he makes a joke like, I'm going to take some leave during that time, which is a reference to this episode. But I really enjoyed seeing Troy have to step into a command position, because I think really kind of for the first time we're showing that she's more than just, you know, she's set dressing in some ways, because I feel like we kind of, you know, the writers didn't really, it's unfortunate that they didn't really know what to do with her for the first few seasons, but now it's like, oh wait, she actually does have a rank on here. And now, and I thought it was very interesting to watch O'Brien and Roe just kind of going, you know, they were just falling into, this is what we have to do in the sense of a disaster, whereas she has never had that sort of training. I mean, she's concerned with the emotional well-being of everybody, but now she's being forced into positions like Eve was talking about, where she has to make a life or death choice for a lot of people. And I, what I think is great is that this will play into a later episode where maybe she might learn a thing or two about more command experience. But I will keep it short because we're running long here, but great episode, and it's definitely, when it's on, it's a must watch for me.
I love that you hinted at some more Troy growth in the future. Thank you very much, the Matt Boardman. All right, Jake's final take. Srock, you have any final thoughts on this episode?
A lot of people liked it, and I did like it too. I did like how they broke up the stories into several fragments and everybody had their own problem to solve. Really interesting for me. O'Brien's sensitivity to Troy's dilemma was something that registered to me. I felt like he was aware that this was difficult for her, and he was trying to make it easier. So he came up with solutions. He didn't down talk her. He didn't make her feel ignorant about the facts. He was very comforting, in my opinion, in that moment. And I thought that was good. It showed good character on his part. When Rolaren figures out a way to get electricity back to the panel or whatever, Troy says, how did you do that? And she's like, I rerouted the power from the thing. And then O'Brien's like, that's improper procedure. And I'm like, bro, we're in an emergency situation. You're talking about proper procedure. And, you know, it's like, seriously, this is life or death stuff. Like, that was a little bit of a nitpick there. O'Brien, you would reroute the power from something or other and try to jerry-rig a situation yourself. We've seen you do it before. So it's part of Star Trek. I mean, Scotty's been doing that from the original series, right? I can't, Captain. I have to do it I have to do this, and I have to, you know, it's always like I have to do something and figure it out. And that's what Rolaren did. So I don't see the big problem there. I was wondering about Data's head, and like, is it a screw off? You know, like, like, is it like taking the battery out of the back of the remote control, that little thing that you flip off, and then you just like, I wonder how it attaches. I don't know if it's like a button push release thing. It has to be more complex than that, because it had to be watertight or something. I don't know. I was curious about the full head removal part.
I think it's kind of like a Pez dispenser, I heard.
Like picking it up. Okay.
It's fully functional.
Yeah. I don't know why I liked it when the little kid said, we're going to die too. I was like, whoa. Who invited you to the elevator? Calm down. Yeah, and I guess my last thing is, I am so curious about this song that I had to write lyrics to it. Just the small opening lyrics, but it's the laughing Vulcan and his dog went to play at Ryza. They both got drunk, they both got laid, but only one wore Geordi's visor. Oh. That's it. Sorry, I to do that, guys.
Talk
but
about
in the spirit of Carrie Swift, you know, I had to come up with something creative for that I feel like there should be a nice little nursery rhyme song for this Vulcan and the dog. Somebody got to flesh that out. Yeah. Jason might have that flushed out for us in the next segment, so we'll stay tuned for that.
That's it for us, everybody, if you could believe it. Great stuff. So thank you very much to the Matt Boardman, Chris McGee, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Carrie Schwent, Chuck A, Eve England, Faith Howell, Chris Garris, Jason M. Oak, and Melissa Longo, for myself, for the lyricist Siroc Lofton, dropping bars on all of us, for Melissa Longo, for Mr. Aaron Eisberg. Thank you all very much for hanging out with us. We will see you next time. And until then, always remember the seventh rule.